Do you understand? Miss Grimm hissed. Your father did that. She pointed at the TV screen. That is why he is an enemy of the Confederation. Whatever sympathy you might feel for him, I want you to remember all the people who died today, wizards and muggles alike. He did that. Is that the sort of thing you want to be a part of? Alexandra shook her head. No. Oh.
Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Remedial Magic Podcast. My name is Brady, and with me, as always, are my brother Baylor and our good friend Delbert. Guys, welcome back to what is the last chapter discussion of Alexander Quick and the Lands Below.
Yes, we made it.
Indeed we did, yeah.
We did indeed make it, unlike Max.
Ouch.
Yeah. That hit right in the feels, I would say.
Yeah, he's dead and gone. It's
dead and gone.
It's unfortunate, but as I said last week, I believe it makes for it's the right call going forward in terms of Alex's growth and the other stuff that she has going on. But first, before we jump into the last two chapters of Alexander Quick in the Lands Below, chapters 36 and 37. We've got a couple of other things to discuss. There's been a little bit of Harry Potter news. We received an email, and there's been some discussion on the Discord as well. So it's a, frankly, it's an active week for our pre-discussion material, which maybe bodes poorly because sometimes when we have nothing to talk about, we still talk for 30 minutes before we ever talk about anything.
True.
We'll start with the Harry Potter news. I'm sure you guys have read it. I'm sure most people that listen to this podcast have read it by now. But the new CEO of Warner Brothers, who was, I believe, the former CEO of Discovery Channel, has gone on record and say that they want to make more Harry Potter movies going forward. That probably means you're including J.K. Rowling in the process because you have to get her blessing to sort of do anything in that realm. And I guess the big discussion on the internet right now is, what does more Harry Potter movies mean?
Well, I believe that he did compare what he wanted to do with the wizarding stuff and Harry Potter stuff to the DC universe and also the Star Wars universe. So I'm guessing he would like a series of movies and TV shows and shorts and maybe a Christmas special all in the wizarding world.
We'll pass on the Christmas special.
Oh, come on.
we'll pass on that, but I think you're right. Like, big picture, long term, I do think that is what he's hoping to achieve here, but more immediately, what does that mean exactly? Does it mean another Fantastic Beasts movie, or does it mean we're going to dive into... A lot of people are speculating that he wants to dive into down the road in Harry's story instead, whether that's through Cursed Child or some other storytelling event, but I know for certain if they go that route, Cursed Child is on the table because I'm pretty sure that it's considered canon by J.K. Rowling. So whether they remake Cursed Child into a movie or they do stuff even past that timeline, I don't know. It just seems like while there's a lot of possibilities, they might be going back to Harry, back to the original trio a little bit, which is, I guess I don't really know how to feel about that.
It's interesting. You think they'll bring Daniel Radcliffe back?
No. I don't think that he would come back.
I don't think so either.
It kind of makes me excited. I mean, that's what brought us all into the universe, obviously, and to learn more about what happens next kind of thing. Kind of excites me. I've always been interested in that. I always thought the eulogy wasn't really enough, in my opinion. I know it was a eulogy, not a eulogy. What am I trying to say?
The prologue.
The epilogue.
Epilogue. That's the one. Not the eulogy.
The epilogue.
That's what we're getting from Max.
But it was fine. But there was just so many loose ends that J.K. Rowling didn't tie up with it. So. It would make me excited, especially if it was like something like the House of the Dragon, where it's like 4 seasons, 10 episodes each. You know, I wouldn't mind that at all.
How about like a maybe like a King's Shacklebolt makes it through, right?
Yeah.
Maybe like Shacklebolt and is it Bill Weasley that's like a curse breaker? I don't remember what it is. Like
yeah,
he works
Bill,
with
he's
wards
like a curse breaker for the Gringotts.
It'd be cool having a show with those two, like going around and trying to round up the Death Eaters that are like hiding after the fallout of the final year.
Something like that would be cool. I obviously something with the main trio would also be very intriguing. But I think if you're going to branch out into a bunch of different movies and TV series, like I think the intention is, I think it'd be more fun to focus on other stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that precedes the main series, stuff that follows the main series. And even I think we can have some fun side along stories as well that follow other characters. Like, it'd be fun to have a TV show where Luna Lovegood is like the main character of the
right.
TV show, and you just kind of follow her adventures because she's certain to get into some crazy stuff as well. So I don't know. There's a world of possibilities here.
I think it's too early, but I'm also still not opposed to a 7-series TV show remake of the movies.
That's still my number one.
It'd be awesome.
Still my number one want.
Yeah.
If we're going to make a list of things we want to come out of the Wizarding World, I would love a 1 season per book.
With all the new like CGI stuff that's
exactly.
possible,
right.
and, you know, getting like the Death Day party and just stuff we missed from the books.
I think that...
I completely agree.
I think with what, you know, this guy's looking at, I actually didn't even read this before we recorded. I'm hearing this for the first time from you guys, but hearing what he wants to do, I mean, everything we've mentioned, I think, would be possible, which is makes me very excited because I think there'd be something for everybody to kind of latch onto, you know?
It does worry me a bit, though, because people love that idea of, like, taking a world and opening it up like DC and Marvel and Star Wars have. But DC and Marvel and Star Wars also have thousands and thousands of pages of source material. Probably millions for DC and MCU. So it's a little bit tougher to spring out of nothing rather than adapting, you know, decades and decades of comic books into screen movies.
This is the thing, right? Like, you brought up House of the Dragon, Baylor, and one of the things about House of the Dragon is the reason why it had such a strong debut season, in my opinion, is because there was already very strong source material laid out for that. And we really don't have these, like, big books of lore from the Harry Potter universe, necessarily, that you can use to base things off of the way that you do with Game of Thrones, the way you do with Lord of the Rings, the way you do with Star Wars. You don't have a collection of the last 80 years of comic books you can use to pull ideas from like you do with DC and Marvel. And so while I think there's some very strong stuff to come out of the Harry Potter universe that could come out of the Harry Potter universe, it's going to really rely on whether or not J.K. Rowling allows Warner Brothers to create a strong team of writers for each of these potential shows. And then actually dive into the universe and write their own stories versus if she's going to want creative control. Because if she wants creative control, it's going to limit how fast things can be produced. It's going to limit the amount of new ideas that come into the universe. And really, it's just going to limit the potential of this idea as a whole. So for me, that's the first thing that has to happen. If I'm going to get excited about this, I need to see that Warner Brothers is hiring writing crews and staff aside from what J.K. Rowling wants to work on this stuff when she's not available. Because if it has to be based on her ideas alone, it's going to be tough to develop this into anything as anywhere near as grand as like the Star Wars universe is.
I think the other thing, too, is you're exactly right that J.K. can't hold all the creative control because that's just going to be a mess. But I think the other next step is the same way like Star Wars has with Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau and MCU with Jon Favreau. You need to find someone that's a true fan that understands the work and understands Hollywood and put them in charge. Like, they are the say-all. They're the people hiring the directors. They're the people that are attending the casting calls. You need to get someone that is actually a fan.
Yeah. No, I definitely think it would either have to have a limited use of JKR or just be completely like something she signs away, which I have a hard time believing she will. But Like, I mean, that's kind of what, you know, led to the success of the Star Wars thing, you know, and the Lord of the Rings branch off, you know, like it's just, and we've seen firsthand what J.K. Rowling does to a movie series, and it's not great. I just don't think she's built for the Hollywood scene, like you were saying, Delbert. So it would definitely have to have very little to do with her or none at all, in my opinion, for it to work.
It'll be interesting to see going forward. It's definitely exciting to think about, again, and we've talked about this many times, potential new works in the Harry Potter universe. I think if you're going to get there, some of their upcoming projects, like the video game, Hogwarts Legacy, stuff like that, is going to have to really be a success, because right now the universe as a whole is sort of on a downward trajectory following the failings of the Fantastic Beasts franchise. And so I guess we're going to see first what the game has to offer. And if that game is awesome and drives a ton of hype towards the universe, I bet shortly after you'll hear some announcements about things that are in the works. Delbert, we have an email to talk about.
We do.
It's a pretty good email. It's from our friend Nick from New Jersey. So if you'd go ahead and inform the people of what Nick has to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to read it all because there are a couple spoilers, as we informed Baylor, or a couple insights into future books. So we're going to avoid that part of it. But we do get from Nick. Just listen to the last episode. Wanted to throw in some comments defending, yes, that's right, Abraham Thorne. Considering the chapters we're about to read, that is a bold idea, Nick from New Jersey. It seems that y'all find the darkest versions of his actions, and maybe I'm an optimistic reader, but here are some of my points. You constantly theorize that it was always his plan to sacrifice one of his children to get the token. But I think you give him too much credit and too much knowledge of the lands below. It seems more than likely he has no idea what's down there and has never been down there. All he knows is that the Confederation made a deal and that there's someone down there to bargain with. For instance, when Alexander returns and accuses him of exactly what you guys think, he has no idea what the Generous Ones are and thinks Alex is insane. Solid point. I think we admitted this when we discussed this part, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second.
Additionally, in an earlier... I lost my way. In an earlier episode, we speculated that he's been down there before, but there's no evidence of that. It's established that all entrances to the lands below are covered by Confederation buildings, blocking his entrance and putting students in the ideal situation to get there. Further, he can't apparate down there because the only way to get down there are obols or tokens. And even if he could, he can't visualize where the lands below are. Overall, he wants to talk about how we are a little bit too harsh on Abraham Thorne, much like Baylor, who seems to still be split down the middle. But he talks about how something in the future may impact our vision of that character.
Sure.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks for reaching out, Nick. It's a nice to get an email, especially from you, one of our super fans, and you brought up some good points for us to talk about. Certainly.
Before you get into your whole thing, Brady, because I know you have quite the what do you say argument against him from what you've told us, Nick. I just want you to know that I'm right there with you, man. I have done everything in my power to be on Abraham Thorne's side from the very beginning. It's just the events of the last five or so chapters. I just, especially these two we're going to talk about today, I don't know how you can say without obviously knowing what comes in the future, because I don't. But from this point right here where I'm at, I have a hard time defending him from right now. And... I mean, if anybody's been a stout Abraham Thorne fan, it's been me, but I just want to put that out there that the only reason I'm having difficulty trusting in him is because of the last couple chapters. So, I don't know. It's not all of us who hate Abraham Thorne. Just saying.
regarding Abraham Thorne, regarding what you say, first of all, Nick, about how you believe that he does care about his kids and that he chose it in his own special way. I agree with what you're saying in regards to that. I agree that Abraham does care about his children. I think that's clear. If I said something to the contrary to that in the last few episodes, I'm going to take that back now, because I do agree that he's probably not completely evil in the way he feels about his children. However, with that being said, I don't agree with your point about Abraham being unable to get to the entrances of the lands below because they're guarded by Confederation buildings and schools. And the proof is right in our last discussion, where when Alex returns from the lands below, Abraham Thorne is there. Or maybe two episodes ago, I'm not sure, but he's there in the school at the entrance to the lands below. So I think to say that he can't get there because of that is just, it's a falsity. It's a falsehood, because he obviously can get into the school. He just chooses not to, because obviously it's a dangerous place for him to go. It's dangerous for him to break into a Confederation building. So that's one place where I disagree with you. Another place where I disagree with you is where you say that, like Alexandra, it's shown that Abraham is a passionate person, quick to anger. Maybe we see that a couple of times, but in his dealings with Alex thus far, she has pushed him to the limit over and over and over again, and we've never once seen him snap. We've never once seen him get to a point where he starts yelling at Alex, or he is forced to shout to get her to calm down or to obliviate her or anything like that. It happens in this moment instead, I think, because of the pressure that he knows that the WJD is probably on their way to the school, because they know that he's broken in. So again, another place where I disagree with you, that I don't think that he's this person who's quick to anger. I think he's very measured most of the time. And that because he's very measured, his actions towards Alex in this instant, his actions towards Alex and Max, sending them to the lands below, that's not just a, oopsie, I made a mistake, I didn't realize what was going to happen situation. Abraham Thorne has successfully been on the run from the Confederation for 14 years because he thinks things through. Not because he does things without knowing what the potential consequences are. So I don't really agree with you that he's innocent in this scenario.
Here's my thought. This is a much simpler approach than what you just described. But if we go to the 1940s, there was a couple nations in Europe at war. Germany, of course, had a very famous leader who everyone considers the worst person in the world. We'll say for Baylor's case, that's the Confederation, right? That's the Nazi Party. Doesn't mean Stalin's a good guy. Doesn't mean the person against him's a good person. He's still a shite lord. I hate Abraham Thorne.
Yeah, exactly that. Abraham Thorne, if the Confederation's as bad as he says, that doesn't justify his actions.
Right. Right.
We're going to discuss this in this episode coming up, but we're about to see Abraham Thorne commit a literal terrorist attack. Right? Kill countless people. We don't know how many people he's killed in this one moment. And when Alex talks to him about it, his response is, bad things happen sometimes.
Not only that, his response is also, not my fault, I told him to stop the train.
Exactly, right?
Why in the world?
So, I agree with you that Abraham cares about his family, but just because you care about your family doesn't automatically mean that the things you've done are forgivable or okay in any sense of the word.
Right.
Right? Regardless, I agree with you with what you just said, Delbert. Just because the Confederation might be bad doesn't mean that Abraham is good or justified in what he's doing. Right?
Right.
His actions do not reflect a man who cares about the well-being of people in general. His actions reflect a man who cares about himself and his motives instead. Right. It's the same thing. And we talked about this maybe last week, maybe the week before. It's the same thing with how Grindelwald is doing all of this for the greater good, right? He's doing this to protect wizards from muggles and to protect muggles from themselves. Even if that's the case, it doesn't mean that the things he's doing are justified.
Right. Like in the start of the second movie, he walks into a house, has all the muggles killed, including an infant. And even if he thinks that's for the greater good, that's still inexcusable, you know?
Right. And so back to your email, Nick, I appreciate what you're saying, and I can certainly see things from your side of the aisle here. Right. But when you say that he couldn't have gotten an obol or a token to get to the lands below, or when you imply that, I just think that what you're doing is falling for Abraham's spell.
Oh,
the
yeah.
same way other people are, right? If a student at Charmbridge named John Manuelito can get an obol and give it to Darla, then there's absolutely no reason to believe that Abraham could not have done the same thing. And so even if he didn't know he was sending one of his children to certain death, right? Even if he didn't know about the generous ones or about the other stuff going on in the lands below, the fact that he didn't go himself out of self-preservation and instead sent a 17-year-old son and then encouraged his 17-year-old son to take a 12 or 13-year-old girl with him to accomplish this, even if he had the best of intentions, the fact that he sent them instead of himself, right? That is a person who is willing to sacrifice anyone, including his own children, to achieve his ends. He might not have known they were going to die, but the fact that Max did die means that this is something Abraham was willing to do, even if it meant the death of his own child. Right? If he thought for a second it was going to kill Max, or Max was going to die in the lands below, and he didn't want that to happen, or that was too big of a sacrifice for Abraham, he would have told Max not to go. And he didn't do that. He sent him anyways. So he was willing to sacrifice his child to further his own cause, even if he didn't mean to. He still did it, right? He was still willing to take the risk. So that's my answer to your email, Nick. It's a good email. I appreciate it.
Even though we disagree, or at least two of us disagree, maybe Baylor by the end of the chapter, we'll see. Keep sending emails. We like them.
I definitely am been finding it hard to agree lately. I've tried to agree up until, you know, the last five chapters or so, including these two. One more thing I'll note, someone who by choice will sacrifice innocent people typically is not a good person also, which we'll get into.
Right.
But he's also done this before in the books. You know, with the
we will get into it. Absolutely.
Ghost curse or whatever it was. So, yeah, it's very hard to for me, even though I am an Abraham Thorne fan, it is hard for me to continue being on his side after the last five or seven chapters.
One final thing I'll say, Nick, and this is really addressing you more than it is Delbert and Baylor, but you do say how he might do something in the future that changes our opinion of him currently, which is all fine and dandy, but doing good things in the future doesn't give an automatic forgiveness blanket for things you've done currently or in the past. Right? That's not, you can't just say, oops, I did something bad, so now I'm going to do something good and it's going to cancel each other out. That's not at all how the world works, unfortunately. And so when we're talking about Abraham possibly doing something good in the future so that we forget or we forgive that he got his son killed, has been absent from his daughter's life for the last 13 years, committed a terrorist attack and killed Lord knows how many innocent people, that one good thing in the future is not automatically a ticket to forgiveness, right? It might be a step in the right direction. But based on what we know about Abraham right now, that one good thing in the future is probably only being done because it's going to help further his cause. So He's a very complicated man. And while I can see your points about how we're judging too early, we're probably judging a little too harshly, he cares about his family and all that other stuff. If my dad did the same things as Abraham Thorne and then came to me and said, but I care about you, I would not care that he said that. I would say, yeah, well, you are a suck ass person. So, you know, it's a very complicated conversation. We do have some stuff from the Discord to talk about as well, which as we're recording, the Discord's popping off, man. There's been like 30 new messages in the general chat, but talking about the Remedial Magic chat in the Discord, the one thing I wanted to address was how we're a long time ago, I'm thinking, we had a discussion about whether or not Dean Grimm should have told Alex who her father is.
Yeah.
I think as a podcast in general, we were pretty adamant that she should have told Alex that her father was Abraham Thorne. But Cogito from the Discord offers a hypothetical that I think we can discuss.
Okay.
It says, say you're a middle school principal in 2009 or so. Before the new school year begins, an FBI agent informs you one of your incoming students is Osama bin Laden's secret daughter. She doesn't know this. She grew up in the U.S. and in all other regards is a perfectly normal girl. Do you tell her? It's a very interesting question because it does put more of a real spin on the conversation.
Yeah.
My two follow-up points to that, which Cogito hasn't answered yet, but we can discuss anyways, is my first question is, in this instance, have I been gaslighting the girl the entire year, basically forcing her to believe she's crazy for knowing something that is the truth? Secondly, have multiple students been heavily implying to the little girl that her father is indeed Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, I think the point, and when we discussed this, I don't know if we pointed this out or not, but the point at which I think you tell her is when she goes into the office and says, am I the daughter of Abraham Thorne?
Right. That's my last point that I asked is the little girl constantly acting out because nobody's answering her questions?
Right, because when that happens, Dean Grimm laughs, goes and gets the registrar scroll, changes it, and then shows it to her to make her doubt what she has like studied to figure out.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate example of gaslighting, for real. Yeah. Alex knows what the truth is, and she asks about it, and Dean Grimm makes her believe that she's the crazy one for knowing what the answer is.
Yeah.
It's not...
Here's the other question.
It's not cool, but also, in that instance, you should tell Alex, and in the real world in that instance, if that little girl already knows, just ease her worries and say, yes, you are, and here's what we're doing about it.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
My other question, too, is... how long do you wait in this scenario? Even if there aren't students talking about it, even if she's, like, doing okay, do you just never tell her in the Osama bin Laden instance?
She's going to find out.
Right. Like, do you tell them when they're 18 or in the Wizarding World 17?
I don't know how you feel, Baylor, but my opinion is the earlier you tell them, the more in front of the situation you get and the better everybody ends up.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to think about someone like Osama bin Laden's daughter because I feel like that person would have been more at risk for some kind of violent reaction from someone in the community, given 9/11, obviously, and especially how the U.S. is. I mean, if you've never been here, it's pretty... There's a lot of radical people out there. But regarding both this hypothetical and what we saw in the book, my only question is, what is the harm in telling these people? Like, if Dean Grimm had told Alex right away, what changes from what happened in the first book, other than the acting out? Like, I just don't see anything negative coming out of telling these girls who their father really is. You know what I mean? Especially
here's my thing.
In like the Osama bin Laden scenario, I think you tell them, hey, you're Osama bin Laden's daughter. We're setting up this protective detail for you. You know, everything's going to be okay. This is what we're doing for it. Just kind of like what you said, Brady. I think that that would be adequate. Like, why keep it a secret? I don't get why that's such, why that would even be a question.
I will say, and like, I don't know, you could be right both ways, because you're right. If the method is to tell her and then set up a protective detail, I guess that's one thing. But also, how long does she have the protective detail in the case of, like, the daughter of Osama bin Laden? And also, I don't want to stir up conspiracy theories or anything like that or discount what actually happened. But we don't know at this point what Abraham Thorne did. Maybe in the magical world, he did 9/11. You know, we don't know what kind of retaliation is in his name towards Alex either. You know, it could have been worse in this fictional history than what Osama bin Laden did. We don't know.
I agree with what you're saying, Baylor, truly, for the most part, where you're saying what are the negatives of saying? And really, what are the negatives of saying? Like, maybe one out of a million times you tell that person and they make it their life's mission to complete their father's horrible, terroristic, heinous crimes in his legacy or something. But really, the ramifications of telling somebody early on, all things being equal, if Alex knows why people are bullying her and making fun of her and whispering about her behind her back, how many of her problem behaviors just go away?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or at least she can identify why people are treating her in this way, and so therefore doesn't have to act out so much against them.
Yeah. And I mean, if it's a complete secret and there's not acting out and there's not people getting involved, I guess I understand it. Because there is some negatives, and we see some of that in the chapters we're going to discuss at some point tonight.
It's not a complete parallel anyways, right?
Right.
If you brought the secret daughter of Osama bin Laden to somewhere, to a school in Wyoming, the odds of people, students in the school, knowing that her father is Osama bin Laden
right.
are very small.
Right.
But the wizarding world is a very small, insulated community where people know about each other's family as like a rule for whatever reason. Right? It's the same thing going on in the mainline series as well. People know about your family just because there's not very many wizards that really exist. And so it's not really an equal comparison, because Alex walks in to a situation where she's the only person who doesn't know about her father until she gets there.
Right.
Right? And so because of that, if Alex is just told from the beginning, look, this is what's going on. This is why people are treating you this way. We're trying to take care of it as best we can. At least she knows, she has context, right? And she can use that context to make better choices.
I mean, look at like what's happened since she found out officially in the first book. Like, she had this dream, whatever you want to call it, vision or whatever, where she was the dark sorceress of the wizarding world. Obviously, that was dramatized, but like, ever since she's found out officially that she's Abraham Thorne's daughter, there's been nothing really negative that has come of it. That the reason they went to the lands below was because she met Max and kind of shoved her way into his plan and everything. You know, like she kind of accepted that, oh, yeah, that's my dad. It is what it is. You know, people are just going to give me a hard time for it.
Well, since Alex found out that Abraham is for sure her father, what's actually happened is she's become 10 times more tolerable as a person than she was before she knew.
That's fair.
Right? Ever since she was given access to that part of her life, knowing that Abraham's her father, having access to her siblings that were fathered by Abraham as well, Alex has actually turned into a decent human being.
Yeah.
Right? She still does some stupid stuff every now and then, but a majority of her stupid stuff is stuff that most kids would get into, aside from the lands below. And most kids wouldn't go to the lands below. But other stuff is just like stupid, I'm an elementary school kid, I'm going to do stupid stuff type of problems. Right. Right?
Yes. I have one question for you. This is a little bit out of the topic, or, well, it's still Alex Quick. Would she have been expelled if Max lived? If they both show up in the basement?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. Kind of for the same reason we're having this discussion, I don't think they expel her because, unfortunately, people know who her father is, and it's likely that Alex didn't just go to the lands below on her own.
Right.
Right. Plus, regardless of how horrible Dean Grimm was in the first book and how basically not there she's been in the second book, we do know that she has an interest in protecting Alex, and expelling Alex would be much like expelling Harry, right? You send Harry out into the normal wizarding world without having the protection of Hogwarts, who's he going to rely on? The Dursleys? That's not going to work. Who's right. Alex going to rely on? Her mom, who won't talk to her about anything in the wizarding world, and her stepdad, Archie, who just doesn't like her?
Right.
Right? It's not going to work if you just expel her. It's like a problem is better kept under watch than it is ignored, right? And that's kind of how Dean Grimm treats Alex, I think, is she'd rather have her around because at least she knows the stupid stuff she's doing.
That's fair. I was just thinking about it. I'm like, she's part of the Mors Mortis. She has an obol. She stole it. She beat up other students. She went through this secret gate to a different, like, dimension.
Like
she's broken a lot of rules.
Here's my thing is, at least to me, it wasn't totally clear. Maybe you guys, now that you've read it two or three times, you kind of understand a bit better. But from my understanding, the only reason they knew that she went to the lands below was because they found her right by the entrance. And otherwise, they just knew that they were missing for, you know, a week or whatever, even though it felt like 3 days to them. So
I think there's a couple other things that lead into that, mostly M existing.
That's fair. I also think there was a mention of the Confederation unable to get into the lands below. Maybe that was in this chapter. I'm not sure. But, like, I guess other than that stuff, you know, there's not really any proof that she went to the lands below. So I think if Max lives, I personally don't think she gets expelled either.
Okay. That is interesting. I wonder if they could prove she went there. They couldn't.
I mean, M would know if M tells people, right?
Yeah.
Right, which they couldn't prove it because they tried and Alex had been obliviated.
Right.
So that's also something interesting to think about, I suppose. But regardless, I guess in general my stance is that if there's like this big, huge, looming secret over a person that's causing their life to be worse, it helps if you explain why that's happening.
Right.
Instead of just keeping it from them and pretending like it's their fault when they really don't have anything to do with it.
Right. I do have one thing to add to this already exceptionally long intro.
Okay.
If a kid cries and cries and cries and wants something, just give in, because after months and months of shaming Inverarity for not talking about us on his live journal.
Oh, yeah.
He has done so. So, indeed. Excellent. We finally got what we wanted. Now we're going to cry and cry and cry until Inverarity comes on the podcast. But he did also cast a young Natalie Portman, I believe, for Alex.
Right.
And it looked good. Go check out the live journal. See the picture he put up. It's awesome. Great casting.
Yeah, very nice shout out, actually, from Inverarity after, I would say, several months of us being a little bit salty
just
about
little
things. So we appreciate that, Inverarity. And it begs the question, do we have to officially replace Maisie Williams with a young Natalie Portman since the author of the book?
I mean, it makes sense, right? It also looks good. Like the picture?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
I agree.
Yeah.
I do agree.
Listen, I'm team Natalie Portman at this point.
Okay, we should probably get into the chapters.
True.
That was maybe our longest ever intro discussion.
Been like a while. We had good questions. Good email.
5 minutes, maybe.
Good email, good Discord question. I mean, I'd love it. I'd love it every week.
It'd be great if it was like that every week.
Yeah.
So this week, we're discussing the last two chapters of Alexander Quick and the Lands Below. Chapter 36, which is called In Memoriam, and chapter 37, which is called Enemy of the Confederation. Last time we talked about Alex's return to Charmbridge after having been in the lands below, how she was obliviated by her father, probably to protect her and also much more likely to protect him as well. Max is dead as we've acknowledged several times, unfortunately, and he's not coming back. So things are just kind of sad in Alex's world, and we pick up right after the end of the last chapter here, where at the end of the last chapter, Alex was given the chance to have her memories back because Abraham delivered them to Miss King in a vial. Alex took that opportunity, and chapter 36 opens with the ramifications of her remembering everything that happened in the lands below. So, again, this is a pretty heavy chapter, I think, unfortunately. It's dealing with the aftermath of Alex losing who I'm just going to go ahead and say the most important person in her life.
I agree.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I would say Anna normally, but she definitely started taking a backseat as soon as the brother reveal occurred.
Right, yeah. Alex kind of stopped confiding in Anna as much when Anna started accusing Max of physically abusing Alex, and Alex didn't really care for that. So she has a little conversation with Miss King here, which makes me feel pretty bad for Miss King. I mean, she did just lose a son, but the only thing she's really concerned about is that she wants to know whether or not Max suffered.
This is going to be a long episode already. Would you want to know?
If he suffered?
If it was your kid?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You'd absolutely want to know.
Baylor?
Yeah, I think I would.
Not just if he suffered, everything. Would you want the details?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I think I would want the details myself. Yeah.
Pretty crazy that she's like, so secure in everything, and like it's pointed out kind of not word for word, but she's like, I know who to blame, and like,
right,
she just wants to know he didn't suffer, and she's happy to hear like he did it heroically, I guess, saving Alex in the process. But past that, not wanting to know, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, it's tough, I guess, until you're in that situation. You really don't know whether or not you'd want to know. But it strikes me that it seems like you'd want to know what your child's last moments were like. Now, none of us are parents, so I guess we don't really have that perspective. But Miss King is very stoic, and I think Miss King, unfortunately, for better or for worse, recognizes that because she got mixed up with Abraham Thorne, she needs to expect things like this to happen in her life. Do you guys think Max suffered?
No.
I don't think so either.
I compared it to like the mirror of the mirror there in the Department of Mysteries, or not the mirror, whatever the hell.
Yeah, the veil.
Yeah, it just seemed like kind of the same instance where almost they fall into it and they're just gone, you know?
I also, when reading this chapter, realized something else. Alex had to travel back from when Max died by herself. And we don't know how long that took, because she had been in the lands below for a week or something like that. So people knew Max had died days before she returned. She was probably also presumed dead, because the ghosts at the crypt were able to confirm that Max had passed.
Oh.
So 3 days before Alex shows up, they probably assumed both of them were dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Alex showing up, like Dean Grimm seeing that, might have just been astonished as well. Like trying to protect her because she thought she was already dead. You know?
True.
Wow. That's actually very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot that it was the ghosts who alerted people first.
Right, because Miss King knew that Max was dead 7 days ago.
Right.
But she also probably just found out 4 days ago that Alex wasn't dead as well. So seeing Alex for everyone is probably like almost a shock.
Huh. I had never even thought of it that way before, but you're right.
Yeah.
Her just showing up again is probably like a huge sigh of relief for Dean Grimm.
Right.
Right.
Hmm.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe even for Abraham. I mean, if Abraham goes to the ghosts and they say Max is dead, he might assume Alex died too,
yeah,
for real.
And, I mean, they might have known maybe if Alex had died, but they certainly weren't close to her in that way, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it's shown that he was, I mean, he did think that because when he talked to her through the locket in the last couple chapters, like it, there was definitely
that's true
because
that was after Max had died, right?
Yeah, that was after that connection. Yeah,
he probably had just found out Max died and was trying to figure out if she was still alive or not.
Huh.
Yeah, that was after that connection had been made with the locket and the lands below and the lands above.
That is some good detective work, Delbert.
Woo!
Very nice.
Proud of myself.
So Max's funeral, his memorial, is at Blacksburg Majory Institute, which indicates to me the fact that the school is hosting the memorial for Max indicates to me that Max is a pretty popular dude at this school. I mean, maybe Miss King just paid for it to be there, I guess, but it seems like a pretty high honor to hold for a student at the school.
I thought it was pretty neat. One more point on what we just talked about. I also think that's why Dean Grimm didn't tell Alex's parents that she was missing, because they didn't know what happened to her. So maybe they just wanted to deal one blow if she was dead. But, yeah, regarding the school hosting the funeral, I think it's really neat. I think since they were at Charmbridge, that small group of students, like, it was their way to honor him. And so I would hope that they offered up the grounds to host a funeral there free of charge, so to speak, you know, for the Kings.
I suppose this does happen in the real world. When a student of a school dies, it's oftentimes that the funeral will be at the school in the gymnasium or something.
Right. And especially with it being like a military academy, I assume that's even more normalized.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. We do meet the other three sisters here.
We do.
Just briefly, but we do meet them. We meet Lucia and Drusilla. Drusilla?
I am so mad at your first pronunciation. I believe it's Lucilla and Drusilla.
Lucilla.
I think so.
Unbelievable. Lucilla and Drusilla. And then
you were throwing some Spanish in there, huh?
We also meet Valeria as well.
Yeah.
Or Valeria, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Cousin of malaria.
Right, exactly. We find out that one of them is an artificer, which is neat.
That's cool.
Artificer in this context, do we assume that it means that she's messing with, like, magical objects?
I think so, right?
I guess it does say it's the production of enchanted artifacts. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then another one of them is a historicist.
Yep, that's Valeria.
Yeah, Valeria, whatever we want to call her. She's a historicist, and she studies history that she's not allowed to study in the Confederation.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What does that mean?
Don't know.
That's interesting.
Whitewashed stuff, like, for better, or for a muggle term, whitewashed history, I guess.
Yeah, yep. That's very interesting.
I feel like that would come into play in the next book. Personally, but we'll see.
Sure seems like it, right? Yep. What if she's studying stuff to further Abraham's cause that she can't study in the Confederation because it's all hidden, right? Like,
yeah. What if she's after the Deathly Hallows?
She might be.
Ooh.
She is doing all this. All of her work is done in Europe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's across seas.
She's going to Hogwarts finding the stone and the wand.
But we don't really find out what, are both Lucilla and Drusilla artificers?
I believe so.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Because they both told Alex that if she's interested, she can apprentice with them.
I also want to point out one other thing we learned from this section about these sisters. Valeria flew here on a Muggle airplane. And uses email. It's cool.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Imagine being the only witch in the entirety of the wizarding world competent enough to use email because they realize, instantaneous is faster than sending an owl.
Right. Except she does say an international owl will probably reach me faster, but I think that's because she doesn't check it.
She doesn't
right?
check her email often, which is bizarre. Like,
yeah.
Why would you say you have it and then
she
say,
probably
I don't
just
use it?
She probably only does it if she goes to like a Muggle coffee shop or something, right? Or like a library. Like that's when she probably checks it.
Maybe this band research she's doing is at like at Oxford or something like that. And Ooh. So she uses email to converse with her Muggle, the Muggles that help her out.
Right.
I mean, it would make sense if it is about Muggles, right? Because the Confederation seems to be pretty anti-Muggle, I guess.
The Confederation is a bunch of trash.
Yeah.
And when you send us an email about that, Nick, I want a cited bibliography of your points.
Ooh, brutal.
But regardless, the memorial happens. It's very sad. Martin and Beatrice are very, very upset because they were very close with Max. Beatrice goes out of her way to tell Alex that her and Max were never anything but friends. Why she does that, I'm not really quite sure. I guess.
Maybe the rumor had been going around and she's just trying to shut it down.
Well,
like, I guess, but
I don't know.
Wasn't there a discussion earlier in this book about if they'd been something more and she said, well, something happened, so we weren't?
There was, like when they're dueling,
yeah.
Alex asked her if she was interested in Max, but once again, it feels like it was put to bed 22 chapters ago.
It's just weird that she just points it out.
No, I agree with
that to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the memorial happens. It's nice. And they go back to Croatoa and they go to inter Max officially in the crypts in the wooded area of the island. They don't have his body, but they go in there anyways. And they inscribe in memoriam of Maximilian Alexander Thorne on a stone inside of the tomb. And the ghosts are there, I think, largely to comfort.
Yeah.
Miss King and Julia and Alex about the situation, because they're talking about how they're going to watch over Max and how he's made it to the afterlife where none of them could. And that kind of stuff. So I suppose that while it's fresh and it hurts, that's probably somewhat reassuring to Miss King and Alex and Julia.
Well, it also confirms that he wasn't a ghost somewhere also.
It does, which for Alex, that probably sucks.
Yeah.
I'm sure in the 13-year-old girl's mind who can't see much past the situation, she'd probably love it if Max showed up at Charmbridge as a ghost. And she had him to talk to. But as we've learned in the wizarding world, the most important people to you, they don't come back as ghosts. They move on.
Right. That'd be too easy for the story.
There's not much else in this chapter, to be honest. Miss King invites Alex to come back anytime. Basically orders Alex to stay in touch with Julia, which will be good for both of them because now they've both lost somebody very important, so they can instead rely on each other. And Alex takes a trip via Portkey back to Chicago so that she can return to Charmbridge because she still has to take the spawn, even though all this is no Harry Potter garbage.
Nope. Finals are not canceled.
Well, I enjoyed this part too because we kind of get some of the text from Harry Potter, the actual Harry Potter series. They told her it would be a sensation like being hooked behind her navel and jerk through space, but then she remarks that the hook felt like one that a side of beef would be hung on. So it must be pretty
actually
intense.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, Portkeys kind of suck. Huh?
Yeah.
No wonder Valeria takes an airplane.
Yeah.
When I read that part, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's gotta hurt.
I also want to, before we move on to the next chapter, as this is the end of this one, point out the also very important part that Alex shares everything.
She
with
does.
Julia.
She does. Yeah. Julia wants to know and Alex tells her. And
yeah. Good for Alex.
Yeah.
mentally.
Honestly, it is good for Alex to just probably just say it.
Yeah.
To just say, these are all the things that happened. Because keeping all that in, I can't even imagine what that feels
right.
like.
Yeah. And also, Julia's got to be like, what in the hell? Like, not knowing any of this stuff,
yeah.
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Also,
the chapter
say good on Miss King, because she's the one who tells Alex to yeah. at least talk to somebody, if not her, about what happened.
Miss King is the best character in this entire yeah. series so far.
Miss King is the mom Alex needs.
Yeah. yeah.
That's for certain.
Another note. Before
she is the
on.
Molly Weasley, I guess.
Another note before we move on. Charlie went on the train with the other BMI students and not in the Porky. Something important, maybe.
He did. Because Inverarity has established that Porkies are not fun for animals.
Yes.
Right.
Which, to be fair, that makes sense.
They're not fun for people
right.
either.
Right. And people can rationalize a little bit better than animals can.
Also, so, makes me just think Edward from Twilight was an excellent wizard, since he just casually, like, walked down the Porky with Arthur and his father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that crossover series.
Yeah.
yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
The chapter ends.
Oh, Cedric Diggory, when they take the Porky in the right, movie, okay. him, his father, and Arthur Weasley are just, like, perfectly okay yeah, going through okay. it.
Yeah, yeah.
What is this?
I apologize. My phone's doing something weird. Anyways.
Excellent.
The chapter ends with Alex arriving in Chicago at the Wizard Rail Station. It's chaos there. Aurors are petrifying people and using impediment jinxes on people to get them to stop from stampeding. And Alex doesn't know what's going on, but she's about to find out because Diana Grimm is there.
Yep.
And not only is Diana Grimm there, it is on point for the WJD to send somebody to interrogate Alex the day after her brother's funeral.
Absolutely.
Dude.
They also interrogated her the day she came back from her brother dying.
That one makes a little more sense.
It does, but...
you know?
It's still crazy. Yep.
But Diana Grimm shows up. We go to the next chapter, and Diana Grimm immediately starts interrogating Alex. Where's your father? Did he come to the funeral? Have you spoken with him? Alex gives all the standard answers of, no, I haven't. Okay? Leave me alone, bitch. And then we find out that Abraham Thorne is a terrorist. He's a domestic
yeah.
terrorist.
Yep.
Now, Baylor, I have to ask you, because you...
Sorry. We also...
we've touched on this a little bit earlier in this episode, but... You're the one who's been saying maybe there's hope for Abraham Thorne. How do you feel now that you know that he purposely crashed a train and killed hundreds, maybe hundreds of innocent people?
Not only that, I'd like to point out one other thing. The Deseret Rose, which I assume is another train, is now trapped in the lands below.
Yeah.
Under the Rockies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. Like I said earlier... Someone who sacrifices innocent people for their mission typically is not a good person. So yeah, I mean, if there was a supposed final nail in the coffin for me, you'd think this would be the one. So it is. So yeah, I
excellent.
I
thought you were about to say, but it's not.
Okay.
No, I think I don't know. You guys know more than me, obviously. There's still three more books to read before we catch up to what Inverarity is working on right now. But yeah, he doesn't look good. And like I said earlier, and I've said the last couple episodes, these last several chapters have been pretty tough for Abraham Thorne fans. So yeah, it was disappointing, to say the least.
This is also a horrific scene. These trains are wizard trains. They're traveling probably like 800 to 1,000 miles an hour with what we've like discovered through the Auto Magica. And instead of passing into the lands below, it just hits a solid wall.
Yeah, it just smashes into the ground.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, we also, I mean, I remember us talking about it earlier in this book, but we also find out how the trains travel so fast. which is cool.
True.
That they go, into through the lands and below. Come out. I don't think that that's something we knew before. At least I didn't.
We did not.
So if any good things came out of the terrorist attack, it was that.
I guess. Yeah.
Right. We learned.
Now, not only that, it doesn't only kill wizards and witches. It also kills muggles because the train, I'm not really sure how this works, but the train just crashes into solid ground.
I think it's supposed to like dive almost from an elevated track right. into a tunnel, but instead of going into the tunnel, it just hits ground and slides,
and
taking
slides
out muggle
and destroys
houses.
Houses and all kinds of stuff,
yeah.
man. Like,
yeah.
This is not cool. And Dean Grimm, not Dean Grimm, Diana Grimm uses it to kind of prove a point to Alex about, hey, this is your father's doing. He is an asshole after all. Do you believe us now? And while I understand what she's trying to do here, it's not very nice of her to be doing this to Alex right now.
It's not, but it's also not very nice of Abraham to be committing domestic terrorism.
It's not, but like shoving it in Alex's face like this the day after her brother's funeral, after she's been through a horribly traumatic experience already, this is not how you deal with an upset child.
All I'm saying is if this is the real world, not the wizarding world, they're not just interrogating the closest person to this. They're being sent to Guantanamo.
Yeah, Alex is probably going under some pretty severe custody rules.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I agree. Sucks for Alex. I don't think it's unwarranted in this case, though, from Diana Grimm. I do also like her just... It says she snapped, but obviously it was planned, and she just goes around obliviating every muggle that's watching them.
Right.
Because, like, they're hearing stuff they shouldn't hear.
Right. I did want to talk about this, because she tells Alex about how this is her father's doing, this train derailment. There's been muggles killed, witches and wizards killed. There's people stuck in the lands below. There's people stuck on other train lines, because the whole, effectively the entire rail network for the wizarding world has been shut down at this point. And Dean or Diana Grimm takes Alex into a laundromat to have this discussion around a bunch of muggles, and then just goes through and removes memories from every person in the room. Cold, calloused, dude. Like,
yeah.
There's no reason they couldn't have had this conversation in a place that didn't involve muggles.
Right. It was just she wanted the TV yeah. to show Alex.
Right.
I think it hits home more because it's showing not only the wizard side of things, but also the muggle side. You know, like that there was muggle casualties as well, which are even more innocent people than what the everyday wizards are, because they don't know anything about this world to begin with.
I have a question for the two of you.
Sure.
Alexander Thorne is what, 12? 13?
13, I think.
13. Yeah. The Thorne Circle was made and basically vanished when she was born, like, shortly in, so there's been, what, 12 years of the Thorne Circle hiding?
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean Abraham Thorne has been trying to complete this part of the plan for 12 years?
Dude, that is a good question.
Like, has he been trying to get the passage to the lands below all this time and just finally succeeded?
That is a good question. I don't know. I guess you have to also ask, is this the reason he wanted the lands below?
Right.
Or is he just, now that he has access to the lands below, he's, well, like, oh, I can also commit domestic terrorism.
I believe in the first book, we're like shown that a lot of people think that they're like done or they disappeared. So it's not like they were committing terrorist acts over the last decade, right?
Right.
So he gets this tool and immediately uses it. I think this has been planned for some time. Like, if I can just find a way to shut them out of the lands below, I'll slow down their train lines. Or maybe their auto magica, whatever uses it.
But what's the purpose of doing that? Like,
just to be a menace? I don't know.
I don't know. We find out later that he warned the Confederation that this was going to happen, which doesn't mean that he's a good person, even though that's how he tries to frame it. Mm-hmm. I warned them and they didn't listen to me, so people had to die.
Right.
Right. But is it more of a power play? Like, Now that he has access to the lands below, he threatened it. And then when they didn't listen, he had to follow through. So that way, now the Confederation knows, oh, he's serious.
Was it just a way to, like, say, hey, look what I've got.
Look what I can do now. You better watch out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
if
what is his goal? Do we know?
I don't think we know, which is fine, because if this is his goal, it was to cause this train accident, that is a weak, weak reason for him to have sent his son off to the lands below.
Well, like, he tried to kill the president, right?
Or there's the gotta be more.
He tried to kill the governor general and failed. So what is he going to do? Commit terrorism and then pull a Voldemort and be like, hello, everyone. Send over the governor general and you'll all live. Like,
there's got to be more.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a tough question because there's no way to know. But if I were to speculate, I mean, I agree with you that this is probably priority number one if he comes back. But also, I mean, what made him come back in the first place? Like, what made him come into the public light in the first place? Because from the first book, we kind of, the way it was talked about, I mean, kind of like what you said, people thought that they'd gone into hiding, that they just reassimilated with society and kind of have, you know, destined themselves to just die normally, you know, live a normal life, whatever. And so, like, what, other than Alex, obviously, which I would guess personally that that's the reason why he's suddenly in the private light or the public light again, is because of the actions of Dingleberry last book, the janitor. But, like, I definitely agree with you that this was probably priority number one. I mean, it's such a weapon, being able to have safe passage throughout the United States, you know, by yourself without the risk of being found by the Confederation, I'm sure was priority number one. But my bigger deal is, like, you know, what brought him into the public light again? What triggered that?
That is that is such a good question. Like, beyond a good question, because you're exactly right. What the hell did he come back for now?
Yeah.
He certainly was not waiting on Alex to go to Charmbridge to make his big return.
Maybe,
there's no way.
Maybe he's just really struggled, like Nick from New Jersey said, to get to the lands below. And Alex is the first one to figure it out.
I mean, that seems...
But it seems like John Manuelito knew it.
Dude,
and if he knew it, other people have to know it.
Abraham Thornton is this big, feared wizard.
Right.
People are scared of him for a reason.
Right.
And I refuse to believe it's only because of his prowess with words that he achieved the power he achieved.
Well, we also know that he's at least talented in the arts of magic, because the Thorn Circle itself was, like, an extremely powerful Fidelis charm or whatever.
Right.
So, like... Again, the argument that he needed Alex and Max to get to the lands below, and that's why he could advance his arch plan here, I just don't buy it.
The other thing, too, is Ben Journey was in Charmbridge, right? Like, he could get his people into Charmbridge. So even if he knew that he needed someone to be there, he could have sent someone years ago. Maybe that's why Ben Journey was there. I don't know. Maybe Ben Journey was trying to find a way in that whole time.
Maybe, but again, why didn't he just do it himself?
Yeah, I don't
honestly
know.
If John Manuelito could get access to an obol, and Alex could find out through a children's book that an obol is what you need to get to the lands below, why could Abraham Thorne not just do that himself?
And she found it out through elves. Which, that's kind of rare for wizards to befriend elves, but it seems like Abraham Thorne would also be one of them that is, like, friendlier with elves.
He has access to elves.
Right. Plenty of them.
Like,
it's crazy.
It's a good question you bring up, Baylor, about why now?
Yeah.
Because he's had children moving through the system for the last, however, what, 15 years, probably.
Yeah.
So why now?
Unless it's just a show of power. Like, hey, I got it. Look.
Right.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, in my opinion, it has to center around Alex. I don't know. Like, it seems like Alex being so young, because, you know, it seems like her other sisters are adults now. But it seems like maybe Alex being so young, now that Abraham Thorne kind of has this master plan where he knows how to, you know, where the lands below is and stuff, that he views Alex as like a weapon he can use. Obviously, that's what we've been talking about a lot, but maybe that's kind of what's triggered the reemerging of Abraham Thorne, is that now he has this weapon who's coming of age, becoming her own powerful witch. And so he's like, this will be the turning point. You know, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know. Obviously, you guys maybe do, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. If it is just the case that Alex is the answer and he's just been waiting for her to arrive, then we better see some incredible growth from Alex in the next few books.
Right.
Because while she is very powerful, she is very skilled with magic, she's not anything that a person Max's age can't handle, as evidenced by the facts that all the people Max's age handled her no problem.
Yeah.
One thing I want to bring up as well, and this is a little late, it should have been in last chapter. One of Abraham Thorne's kids did not make it. Because Max talks about how there's three older sisters he knows of, and then one that they haven't met or haven't heard from.
Right.
That person seemingly was not introduced.
Yeah.
So, still just an older sister somewhere.
Somebody just still existing out in the aether somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard of, like, the seventh son thing. You know, like, seven is a magical number. If that's the case, then right. Alex would be the seventh child.
That's true.
The seventh child. So maybe that, I mean, maybe that plays a part of it. And maybe that's why she seems to be the most powerful out of all of them. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's hard to say right now. I mean, maybe we'll find out more in a future book. But there's a few other things that happen in this chapter. It's kind of a wrap-up chapter, of course, because it's the last chapter of the book.
Yep.
Alex goes and talks to Brandon Poe. They kind of know what's going on. They basically say, you know what, Alex, you're a good witch. You're naughty, but you're a good witch.
She tells them to apologize to M.
Yep. We do find out that Constance and Forbearance might not be coming back to school because their parents don't like that they're consorting with the devil, essentially, in Alex.
Yeah.
But they're gonna take care of their ma and pa. They promise.
These are the consequences I was talking about earlier in our debate, whether to tell someone or not. If there's no problem and you tell them and then the info gets out, these are the kind of consequences you could have.
Yeah.
Alex goes home, does not talk to Claudia about what happened.
Right.
Because why would Claudia want to know about the things her daughter's been up to? I guess maybe if Claudia doesn't know about the Wizarding World that much, she wouldn't be able to understand if Alex tried to explain the lands below.
Yes.
She would probably think she just was claiming to have gone to hell.
Yeah. Also, before we get home all the way, Angelique makes an appearance and says thank you for rescuing Honey and basically leaves it at that, but also tells that Darla is not being prosecuted
for
anything.
Right, yeah.
So,
because Darla's got connections.
A little bit more info on some of the characters through the book.
Yeah.
Quimley shows up when Alex gets home.
She does. Or he does. Sorry.
Which is weird, kind of. I, like, thought Quimley couldn't come back to the lands above. I think Quimley even says that Quimley can't come back to the lands above in this conversation when Quimley's in the lands above. So I don't really understand how this is happening.
The only
go ahead, Baylor.
The only thing that I thought of was that, I mean, we've been told by Quimley, we were told by the generous ones, that the only way anything can leave the lands below is with permission from the generous ones. And so my thought is the generous ones have this, obviously, this code. If something's gifted, it's theirs. There's no going back. But if something isn't gifted, like something left by Max, then they have no right to it. And so my thought is the generous ones gave Quimley permission to go back and return these items. And then that's where that permission ended. And so that's why he says, I can't come back.
Yeah, my thought is that because Max or Alex, at whichever time you're looking, had been gifted, he couldn't take them away.
Right.
And same thing what Baylor's saying, these things weren't gifted, so he can. But I also have a secondary theory, maybe even a conspiracy theory, that Quimley used to be a house elf, a normal house elf in a family, and he snapped and became a serial killer.
What?
And that's why he can't be in the lands above.
Wow,
he's wanted for murder.
Well, I mean, that kind of goes along with the theory that he took down a human sacrifice for the generous ones that I had a couple episodes ago as well.
True.
So. True. The, I guess my conspiracy theory...
Kidnapping and murder.
...is a little different. Quimley also brings back the bone flute.
True.
What happens if Alex plays the bone flute?
She goes back, right?
Dude, that's... gotta be why the generous ones sent Quimley back.
Yeah.
They're pissed that Alex was gifted to them and then she got away.
They like want her to play that and end up back there.
Yeah.
That is an interesting thought, yeah. If I may, kind of going back to the school, I apologize for that. Couple things you didn't mention. She does do her spawn, her end of the year spawn. And a couple things of note in her history of magic or whatever it's called there. Because we know that that teacher, Mrs. Middle, is kind of terrified of Alex and the Thorn Circle and everything, so she tries to mention her father or the Dark Convention every place she could in her final essay, which I thought was funny.
Because Alex is pretty ornery.
Yeah. And then we see Mrs. Shirtliff again for the basic magical defense. And this one is not just a little test. I mean, it appears that they have a full-fledged duel between the two. And to end it off, Miss Shirtliff says, "Well done, but your potential is still just that, potential." So we'll see what happens there. But kind of crazy that how far this has escalated. I mean, a teacher and a student having a duel.
Yeah, they're like blowing apart the classroom in this one, which is pretty fun.
And then one final note. It appears that Alex is not going to be in the J-Rock next year. So,
true. She is not fond of that idea.
Too many bad memories there, or too many fond memories there that have become negative.
Yeah. We also get a visit from the number two enemy of the podcast now at the end of the chapter.
Abraham?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is he number two?
Because Mr. Thiel will always be number one.
Okay, sure.
Archie's a quick number three as well.
Old Alan. Abraham comes back, and this is where that conversation happens. He doesn't come back. They talk through the locket.
Cell phone.
Through a cell phone, right.
Yeah.
He calls her on her cell phone.
I call her on her cell phone.
Right. And this is where that conversation happens, where he basically says, "You know, I warned them, and... they didn't listen, so I had to kill people. It was the only solution, Alex."
Bad argument.
Terrible argument. Really, just terrible argument.
Bad solution.
Yeah.
She also says she will give him anything to get Max back, including her life.
Yeah.
Also, what kind of reach in the government does Abraham Thorne have? Because he did this pretty quickly, it seems, from when he got the locket to now. And he's like... those deaths are on their heads. Oh, and I made sure none of your classmates were on board. He just had a manifest of all the trains and knew which one to wreck?
I don't believe him when he says that.
Does he already know then who the casualties are?
I mean, I think he picked...
because it'd be risky to say that, and then there is one of her classmates on it.
I think he picked a train that was going the opposite direction to help with that, but I also think he's a smart guy. And he knows if one of her classmates were on there, she would have brought it up.
Right.
Yeah.
She would have mentioned it.
Well, unless the bodies aren't identified yet. I mean.
Yeah, but the people she cares about were at Charmbridge, so she would have known.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think it was a convenient choice by him to pick a train going eastbound towards Roanoke and also during the school year. And so I think it was just a safe bet. I don't think he actually made sure of that.
Bummer.
He's a...
could have been Larry Albo and the Rash Twins in there.
True, yeah. True, and then Alex and Abraham would have been on good terms. And
oh, Lord.
But he does tell Alex that he cannot bring back the dead.
Yeah.
Which nobody can. We've learned that throughout these, the main series and now these books as well, that you can't bring back the dead. And Alex hangs up on Abraham, which tends to be how their conversations end, it seems. And book's over. She goes to sleep. Yeah.
Alex needs therapy.
Dude, bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex has got some pretty severe PTSD, if
Dude,
I had to guess.
It's a problem, man.
I mean, it's just like the normal hair, the regular Harry Potter series. I mean, what kind of kid through 2 years of school survives multiple near-death experiences and is just fine and happy? You know what I mean? Like,
I totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, let's make it 3 years. He also finds out that his falsely imprisoned godfather that didn't try to kill his parents was framed by his friend's rat.
Yep.
all That's that, a few sessions right there.
All that need for therapy aside, that is the end of the book. We're going to discuss this book in its totality in our next episode where we kind of wrap everything up. That being said, I do want to just say out front right now, of the two books we've talked about, this is the better book.
I agree.
This is a good book.
I believe, Brady, that you and I told everyone what our favorite books were when we first started this podcast.
I think so.
This was my number one.
Yeah, this is a good book.
Yeah, I completely agree. This book picked up where the first book left off, obviously, with the pace, but took it to a whole nother extreme. I'm excited. I've said this several times. I'm excited to see what is to come in the future books that I have yet to read, obviously.
Yeah, on my first read through, I thought book one was good. I was like, oh, this is a cool story. And I was like worried because I didn't want to read four more books of this. But I started this book, and as soon as Max dies, I was like, okay, I will read anything for this story all the way to the finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good book. That being said, though, we're going to have a whole discussion about the entirety of the book in our next episode where we wrap up season two of the podcast. To finish off this episode, though, we do need to name an ARC MVP. So, Delbert, you get first pick this time. Who was your ARC MVP?
Excellent. This might be a mistake because I might have given it to her last session, or one of us might have, but I am going to go with Miss King because she really is, like what you said, the mother she needs. She is the Molly Weasley right now as far as being like the true person that Alex can connect with, and her advice just brought Julie and Alexandra closer than they were before, of course, and gave her an outlet and everything. So... love the character. Really important. Hopefully keeps Alex from being suicidal or extremely depressed.
I think it's a good choice. She's always a good choice, in my opinion. Baylor, who was your ARC MVP?
So I kind of went with more of an obscure person. I think Miss King is a great choice. I think Julia and Alex are a great choice. But I actually went with Valeria. And the reason why, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, I think that she will play a very big role in the next book. And I think Inverardi, the great writer that he is, kind of sprinkled that a little bit of that in there during the funeral when she said she was kind of talking about her job, you know, not being able to study history that she wouldn't be able to study in the Confederation. So, I chose her as my MVP.
I think it's a good choice. I will say I don't know that there's been a person in the history of this podcast to receive more accolades for doing less than Valeria so far.
I mean, it could completely blow up in my face. I'm not going to lie.
My ARC MVP this time is Diana Grimm, because while she treated Alex horribly and that wasn't very cool and all that stuff, she knew that Alex needed to see the reality of her dad and what her dad is capable of, and she made sure that it happened.
Whether the timing was good or not, didn't matter. She took care of business. And so my ARC MVP is Diana Grimm.
It's a good choice.
We need to rename the ARC as well. I'll go first this time.
Excellent.
This is an interesting ARC because it's pretty sad. There's some terrible things that happen. I'm going to focus on the terrible things. And I'm going to say that the ARC title this time should be, What Do I Do If My Dad's a Domestic Terrorist?
All right, cool. Baylor, we'll see who gets the title naming rights.
Go ahead, Delbert.
Delbert, what's your ARC title?
I'm going to cede to Baylor and also violate trademark laws here and use Al Gore's title of An Inconvenient Truth.
Okay, well, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's a good title.
Really good, actually. Baylor?
I think I'm just going to go subtle and just go with Goodbye, Max.
Okay.
I like it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good. Well, there you go. Our last ARC titles of the book. Next episode, we'll be coming up with a new title for the entire book.
Incredible. Going to be tough.
Yeah.
Because I think this is aptly named.
So, that'll be interesting. But, Baylor, you have one last prediction you've made about this book that we need to listen to and then give a grade.
Upon receiving her memories, Alex simmers silently. At the funeral, nothing major happens other than remembering what was Maximilian King. Then, insanity ensues. For an offer of reconciliation, Abraham Thorne will summon Alex to their ancestor's crypt, but Alex will not be having any of it. Any of it. She will throw curses, meaning words, at the thorny boy, and some other curses, spells, at him too. In other news, to end the book out, Alex will decide to live with the kings in Roanoke. Not great.
Not great.
Yeah, it's not super strong.
The funeral went off without a hitch, so that part was right.
She does trade words with her father as well.
She does.
But he doesn't show up at the crypt. She doesn't live with the kings.
She doesn't hex him.
She doesn't cast any spells at him.
She does show up at the crypt, but not because of that.
Right. It's a weak ending, unfortunately.
I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm actually going to drop to 3.
Dang.
That's unfortunate. Tough. Rough ending.
That's tough. But the exciting news is next episode, we get to go to a prediction you made 20 episodes ago or something, 21 episodes ago, where you made a prediction for the second book. And we get to give that a grade. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Oh. But other than that, a 4 and a 3, I guess.
Indeed. And that ends me. With a average of 6.09 for this book.
That's above 50-50.
It is above 50-50.
Brady, you gave me an average of 6 out of 10, and Delbert was a 6.18 out of 10. So a little bit more generous from Delbert, which is kind of surprising, no offense.
It was all that 112 that I went over 13. The top with because of your... 13, excellent. Yes.
A 13...
Well, to be fair, the prediction 25 weeks ago that Max is going to die in the lands below or something was pretty insane. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. With that being said.
No casting.
No other prediction to make. That's the end of the lands below. We have one episode where we're going to wrap it up. We're going to do a big, long episode. This one's long, an hour and a half or something. But yeah. Our wrap-up will be at least 2 hours, I imagine.
I would guess so.
So stay tuned for that. And then when that's over with, we are going to take at least a 2-month break.
I think so, yeah.
We're going to take a nice long break. We really didn't take a break for the last year of recording this podcast. Even when we took those 2 short breaks in the middle of book 1 and 2, and even when we had that 2-week period or that 3-week period where we didn't release an episode, we were still recording stuff and still working on the podcast. So Our next episode will be the final one of book two, and then we're going to take at least a 2-month break to kind of recuperate. And
if I had to guess, we would probably be back on the 1st of January.
Something like that. Yeah. We'll be back, but we are going to take a nice long break after the next episode. But we still have a next episode, so tune in for that. We'll be excited to discuss this entire book and kind of review our thoughts over the last however long it's been, 5 months or so. But that'll be next week.
And this is coming out tomorrow, so I would implore anyone that wants to reach out about this book to email us or get on Discord and message us.
True, actually.
And we can talk about the book next week because we're recording basically live here, so.
And with that being said, I've been Brady.
I've been Delbert.
I've been Baylor.
We'll see you next Sunday.
And don't do domestic terrorism.
Have a good night.